Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, I know, Bruce, last night, the buzz was all about AEW's tag team division and a particular stellar buzz-generating tag team title match in a cage on their All Out pay-per-view. WWE comes back tonight, and I'm not saying they wouldn't have done it otherwise, but it's an interesting contrast how WWE portrays their tag teams, the depth chart that they have, and the way that they tell their stories. It's an interesting contrast because this Raw ended with a moment that got the fans on their feet, which was Bobby Lashley and Amos taking it against each other. And there was like anticipation and oohs and ahs as they battled. And ultimately, MVP and Lashley are set up to face RK-Bro next week for the tag team titles, thanks to winning tag team turmoil. So a real big percentage of tonight's Labor Day edition of Monday Night Raw built around the tag teams. What do you think? Did it work? Was it successful on its own merits?
The last time I was on the Raw post show with you, we had some kind of angle that bookended the show from the first moment to the last moment. And this was another one of those shows. And I like having those bookend moments. Now, how they got to the bookend moment, I'm not too keen on, with pausing the match because of the post-match attack from Mason T-Bar and then resuming it later. However, it did serve its purpose. Now, what you're saying about how they tell their stories, the biggest pro to this type of match is that it takes up over an hour of match time during a show. Now, on a three-hour show, that's great. The biggest con of this match, as I wrote in my report, is that these are matches that should be happening over several weeks, maybe in a tournament style, to determine who then becomes your next tag team champion, because that would then be, you would then be able to have more fan investment in each of these teams as they head into these matches. So there's pros and cons either way, and it just, I'm not sure if, like I said, I like the bookends, but I'm not sure if it was the intended, or if it hit its intended goal after what happened last night, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not drawing the conclusion for sure that WWE said, right, we're going to outdo the Lucha Bros and the Young Bucks and have a tag team turmoil match. The lay of the land was there with MVP and Lashley last week. So this feels like the wheels were in motion and all that. Mm-hmm. But it is still interesting to look at the contrast in the two styles. Now, this was not – I mean, tonight was to build up the current Raw tag team title, the most marquee matchup that they can offer right now, which is the hot team within the context of Raw. Good crowd reactions from all our reports, RK-Bro, taking on the – Raw singles champion, the WWE champ, and MVP. There's certainly a weak link in there with MVP, the way he's been portrayed. But Lashley's a champ, and the anticipation with Lashley and Amos battling it was a moment on Raw. It was, one mm-hmm. of the things the show will be remembered for. So, I agree with you. Sometimes the tag team turmoil format, or any kind of format like this, it feels like, oh, it's a holiday, half the crew's not there. What are we going to do? We got 3 hours to fill. Hey, we'll do tag team turmoil and work it out and have the producers and wrestlers work it all out and fill up half the show with one match and a bunch of teams going out there. I don't think you should do that very often, but I don't mind it when they do it, as long as they're not doing it all that often. And I think it was booked well. Like, I think the right
yeah.
teams won. I think they told a good story with New Day. Uh-huh. I kind of like bookending the show and having there be a logical reason to end it or to cut it off. And then Sonya and Pierce come out, like, we're going to, or maybe just Sonya, but we're going to restart this later. We're not going to let it end this way. I thought that, for a show that's on 52 weeks of the year and there's different formats sometimes, right now, RK-Bro's the hot act. Lashley uh-huh. is the top star. Now they put him in a tag team to freshen him up. I think this worked.
Yeah, I have a lot more to say on this, but I know this is going to be the main topic of the show because of how it took up over an hour of the show in terms of match time by itself, approximately, if my math is correct. And that could be very wrong, knowing me in math, or math and how I work with math. But yeah, I do want to say that I've always been a big Gourd Buster fan, and the fact that Omos hit a delayed Gourd Buster here to Lashley as the big moment, that really warmed my heart, I should say. And I think for Omos, that is going to be played in his highlight packages if he becomes what they hope he can become in a main event attraction.
When Omos tagged in and then Lashley tagged in, it crossed my mind, hey, you know, Omos is really limited and really green, but the way Vince McMahon promotes, and I wasn't a fan of sacrificing, you know, New Day and Riddle and the way that they have to him. I think they fed him too much too easily, to the point that my memory tells me, I think New Day were hurt. I think Riddle was hurt as an act. And even the way they described other opponents of him, like it was just like, you know, Orton doesn't have a chance against him, that kind of thing. It's like, what? So they spent a lot. There's a lot of equity that was put into Omos. But if you're going to pay it off and you're going to protect him and you're going to, and you've decided perhaps rightfully he's worth investing in and protecting. And because he's so limited, you have to kind of go to the other extreme to have wrestlers bump for him and put him over as unstoppable. The payoff to that is kind of that moment with Lashley, that teaser of something that can come later. And the question is he competent enough in the ring to pull off a singles match, especially if AJ's agitating at ringside, creating some spots and that kind of thing. And this was a hint of what's to come. And I think a success story, in as much as it's measurable, you know, in this era, that maybe the crowd's into Omos. And I think his body language, his facial expressions are where they need to be, where this can be an anticipated special attraction type wrestler for WWE.
I'll just end this specific segment of our discussion by saying what they did with Braun Strowman and his growth gives me hope for what Omos can do in the future. But they just have to make sure they give him probably at least another 12 months to really grow into something, which at this rate he's not going to get, but they need to be, they need to have some patience with him moving forward.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's pause here, introduce ourselves, and then take phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, September 6th, 2021. I'm Wade Keller. I'm the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, a paper copy weekly publication documenting the professional wrestling industry, even dating back to prior to the internet and certainly prior to podcasting. And we've got over 1,700 back issues dating back to the late 1980s available as soon as you become a VIP member. So if that intrigues you to see what I was writing about, I don't know, the very first SummerSlam, Ric Flair's title losses, Hulk Hogan in the WWF before he went to WCW, and then followed through on the Monday Night Wars and the whole John Cena era start to finish, all my star ratings, all the cover stories of the big twists and turns in this industry. You can lose yourself in our library by going VIP. There's just simply nowhere else you can go as a one-stop, authoritative, hard-hitting, independent, real-time, contemporaneous accounting of and tracking the evolution of this business. And you can lose yourself in our archives. So as summer comes to an end and you're looking for some weekend reading, that's one of the many perks of being a VIP member. So you can go VIP at pwtorch.com/go VIP. We put up a 20 years ago back issue in PDF and alt text format every weekend. And a couple weeks ago, the back issue that went up marked the official end of our WCW branded coverage. We had held on for a while as WWE and Vince McMahon played around with the idea of keeping that brand alive. And we just had a section dedicated to WCW post-WWE buyout. And it was a couple weeks ago, 20 years ago, in that newsletter that I wrote an editorial saying, you know, we're making the call. You know, it's kind of like election night. You know, the call is in. We're making the call. WCW as a brand is dead. And so there's just fascinating stuff. I wrote the stuff. I edited. I proofread. I did all that. And yet when I look back at these back issues, it's like reading it for the first time sometimes, some of the behind-the-scenes details and rereading editorials. And I'm like, oh, that was pretty good. Or what was I thinking? You know, there's all those moments. So anyway, I invite you to go VIP, pwtorch.com/go VIP. It's an entertaining real-time education on the wrestling business. And I didn't even get into our long form Torch Talks that predated wrestlers interviewing wrestlers constantly on podcasts. Mm-hmm. It was rare Rare to hear wrestlers talk out of character in a long form interview, acknowledging the inner workings of the business. And the Torch Talk interview series, which started in the late 80s, was the longest running long form documentation of pro wrestling in the words of promoters, announcers, and top name wrestlers. So you can just read through those interviews too. And you're not going to find podcasts that cover that same era. Okay. So that little unplanned plug out of the way, my co-host, the other voice you hear so far today is Bruce Hazelwood. He is a PWTorch.com contributor. He covers Raw with his alt perspective reports. His report, a little more detailed than mine, had some big family stuff going on today and got a late start with Raw. So I admit I never do this, but I had to speed through some stuff. Like I make a point of watching every second of Raw. Doesn't mean I don't start 10 minutes or 15 minutes late sometimes and speed through commercials, but I am OCD and a stickler. I don't like missing a single comment an announcer says. I never tune out the announcers. I never am distracted. I owe it my full attention. This is a rare case where I had to speed through some spots in tag team turmoil. But I watched all the relevant stuff in real time. So I'm going to go back and rewatch stuff I missed, but there are some details in Bruce's report tonight, that I didn't catch. And I'll have my updated Raw report on the website later, but my preliminary report, speeding through some of those early tag turmoil moments, is up on the site now. So that's one of the reasons we have an all perspective reporter. And it's also to give two perspectives, just like having a co-host on these post shows. So Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And you know, Wade, I think some, after hearing that, would just call you a masochist, but you know, that's neither here nor there, I guess. And I've actually been on several Torch shows the last couple of weeks. So thank you for having me on again.
Yes. It's always good to get your perspective. Tell people about some of the shows that you have done recently, some of the topics you've covered.
Sure. So a couple of weeks ago, I joined Wade and the new alt perspective reporter for SmackDown, Alex McDonald, in sort of a roundtable format to discuss that night's show. And then last Friday, I was on the AEW Rampage post show with Tyler Sage, the fourth AEW Rampage post show. It's a VIP exclusive, so another reason you should go VIP. And we discussed Rampage, which was probably, you know, the second show with Punk debuting was going to be the most memorable. I think this last one we watched was probably the one that's going to be more in line with the spirit of what the show is going to be into the future. So we discussed that show, made some all-out predictions, which I think we got right. We didn't discuss Paul White versus QT Marshall, so I don't know about that match. But that's what I've been doing, and I do the alt perspective reports for Raw, as Wade says. You might also see me do some news reports for The Torch, along with Zach Cadorn and Sean Radican and some others. So that's me. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253.
Just a family shout-out to Blake and Steph. Congratulations. Also, Jarrett and Trish, congratulations. And hello, Megan. And hello, Jeff. Lots of stuff going on in the family. I won't explain all of it, but
congrats.
Some cool stuff.
I hope.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All great stuff. All okay. Really fun. Yeah. Just a big day in a lot of ways. So let's go ahead and bring some other voices onto the show. I certainly have more to say about Raw. Something, you know, Charlotte and Nia Jax had their title rematch. We have something going on with Shayna Baszler, which we can get into. So yeah, a variety of cool things to talk about. But we're gonna begin with a regular caller of ours, Nick from Brattleboro, is actually up first. Nick, you're in the leadoff position, not cleanup, not sixth in the batting order, not second, you're first. Welcome. How's it going?
Do I bunt for a base hit? I don't know what to do in this position. And what's paper? what's a paper edition? I don't understand that weird concept. Anyway,
still mailing them every week. Yep.
I do recommend that you guys go back and read this stuff. It's really a treasure trove of the history of professional wrestling, no matter what Vince McMahon calls it. So I highly recommend it. Wanted to discuss briefly Almas, however you pronounce his name these days. And it's something, whenever I'm watching a match with him and AJ, it's like, AJ, why are you tagging in? Just let this guy beat these people up. I mean, it's he's so dominant. Why? And it was really funny because in the match tonight, when Bobby Lashley, the announcers were saying, MVP's not stupid. He's letting Bobby stay in there. You know, he's the one who can get it done. I just, it's one of those things that just jars me out of, what's the phrase? Plausible deniability of watching a wrestling show. It's like, yeah, just let this guy beat up these people, AJ. What are you doing getting in there?
I will play devil's advocate and say your top line in hockey still needs a rest. So even if you got a top scorer, you don't want to wear them out. You got to have the second and third line come in sometimes. So, and also it's AJ freaking Styles. Like if he can't, if we have to think that AJ is the weak link, he's a different link. He's got a different style, but he's pretty successful in the way WWE has booked him and framed him. And I know there's a little facetiousness in what you're saying, Nick, but you know, AJ's awesome. And
oh yeah,
I
of course.
Wouldn't, yeah, but I get the spirit of what you're saying, which is if you're going to book Amos that strong, you know, why? It's sort of like, you know, why is MVP taking it? Just let Lashley wrestle. MVP's a weak.
But even in kayfabe though, AJ Styles is an arrogant dick of a dude who thinks he's better than everyone out there. So it makes sense that he'd want to go in and try and get the pin, try and get the win anyway, because
that's true.
What he was like that and do. And to your point about MVP real quick, Wade, I noticed that all he did in the match today was get the crowd cheers, tag out to Lashley, and then get an Enziguri on the outside from Styles. That's all he did in the match tonight, and they won. So good for him.
And he was limping at ringside, yep. So I wonder if he just actually wasn't able to go.
He could still be selling the leg injury from last week.
Yeah, that might have been it. Yeah.
I'm just going to come back at you, your front line, your top line in hockey, which I'm sure if Todd is listening, he's banging his head against the wall. With
after last night, let's say it's the Penguins.
In 1986, Lawrence Taylor played every single play. So, you know, it's you can go both ways with that. But
Amos is a lot of things, but he's no Lawrence Taylor.
He's no Lawrence Taylor. No.
If anything, he's a designated hitter. As a New York Giant fan, give me Lawrence Taylor and Jim Burt, and I'd be totally happy for the rest of my life. But one thing I wanted to, and I don't know if you noticed this, the New Day on the back of their trunks and their new T-shirts, it almost looked NWO-ish with the box and the single letters. It just struck me as I wonder if there's a heel turn coming for them at some point. And, you know, I know they're they're wrestling historians themselves. And it was interesting to see a very plain T-shirt from them.
I'm sorry, because they're a takeoff on the NWO T-shirt or something more specific?
Well, no, because it's like a takeoff on the NWO logo. I mean, it's a box, yeah. And it's got three letters in it with one that's capitalized.
I think they're just trying to earn a bunch of merch money. I hope Nash and Hall and Waltman are getting their cut. I don't see that as portending anything. I see that as just, can we make some merch money off of this? I thought Xavier turned heel when he started playing the trombone in people's faces. He's been a heel for that ever since. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'd read into it like that, Nick. I mean, I get what you're saying.
It probably stood out a little more tonight because Kofi was back. But Woods has been wearing Scott Hall's version of the Outsiders gear for a couple weeks. And then with Kingston back tonight, obviously wearing the Kevin Nash-style Outsiders gear, it connected. But Woods has been wearing the same tights and everything for the last couple of weeks. They even posted on the WWE social media when he first did it about him looking like Razor Ramon and doing the Yo Chico kind of thing and all that. So it's been there a couple of weeks. It's just more stark now that Kofi's back with it and the whole set is there.
Bruce, I bow to your wrestling knowledge on that one. I totally missed
that. I have
that,
to come to the show,
not
you.
Not much else to say really tonight. It's kind of typical, if this show had been 2 hours, I would have been so much more into it. And the last thing I'll say is I'm hoping that they're doing something with Shayna. And I mean, I hope something is developing here that they're finally going to, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what, because I kind of like their dynamic, but I also want them to separate Nia definitely seems to be getting more of a babyface push, if you will, against Charlotte, but not against anybody else. So I'm actually interested to see what happens and with Nia and Shayna, and I'm kind of upset that they kind of went right back and gave Charlotte her win back. I would have much rather seen this play out over 2 or 3 weeks and then finish it off at Extreme Rules and hold off on the Alexa stuff.
And yeah, so, I mean...
Go.
Oh, go ahead, Dick.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I was going to hang up and let you guys discuss that or
all right, cool.
Sign off.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Nick. Always good to hear from you. Yeah, let's talk Shayna and Nia. I mean, those two, their characters on air are based on their characters off air. You know, that was created because they saw, you know, how they were interacting and said, let's amplify this a bit. You know, we see a personality in Shayna that feels authentic when she's playing off of Nia, and Shayna's bringing something out of Nia. We can turn this into something. And, you know, I mean, it seems like, you know, Baszler and Jax started fighting and then they became friends, but they've always bickered. And I'm intrigued. I mean, I think there's something going on here, Bruce, with Baszler. I'm not quite sure what and where it's leading, but it's sort of like Rey Mysterio and Dominic. You know, something's going on. It's brewing. When will it happen? How will it happen? What will the end result be? We don't know. But I'm okay with it. I think moving on to Alexa Bliss and Charlotte is fine. I mean, that seemed to be where they were going. The Jax thing, I think, was just created to fill a couple weeks of TV time, and that's fine. And it ended up serving the purpose of Jax earning a title shot with a non-title win last week, and then this week, Jax getting getting the title shot and Baszler screwing it up for us, so now they can bicker some more. And I don't know if they're going to fight again or what. You know, we'll see. But I thought the story was told well, and, you know, Jax lost, but in a way that had, you know, she took Charlotte's finisher off the top rope, natural selection, because of a distraction by Baszler. So, I don't know. It all worked for me. I mean, it's fine. Again, they got 3 hours a week to fill, 52 weeks a year. They have a limited depth chart on the women's side, and they came up with a two-week story arc that got a little nasty last week. I did a whole Wakeheller hotline on for VIP members last weekend, relaying what wrestlers were telling me they saw when they watched that match in terms of how much of a shoot it really was, and some insight into their personalities and what might have sparked it and their backstory and who's more popular among colleagues in the locker room, just some good behind-the-scenes insights there. And this week they had to cooperate and be a little more professional and tell their story, and I thought they did.
Yeah, real quickly on the New Day, it seems like they're the catalyst for these sorts of gauntlet matches that always happen on WWE programming. but then moving on to Baszler and Jax, I was actually going to plug your hotline from last week for everyone to go with VIP, so you beat me to it, Wade. There you go.
Well, go for it. I'd rather someone else toot the VIP horn than me.
Well, it was very interesting to hear the wrestlers' reactions and how they perceive each of the wrestlers involved in the match last week, both during the match and overall in the macro sense. Because, to be honest, it wasn't what I expected, and I'm not gonna say it here. I'm gonna try and push you all to VIP to hear that, but that just surprised me. What you had heard from wrestlers, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. Especially with, as you were saying, talking about the real life dynamic between Baszler and Jax, that seems to be how do I put it? That seems to be one of the more authentic relationships on screen that we see between them, between anyone in WWE, yeah. We should say, which is nice. Now, my issue with how this played out is it seemed like a couple months ago they were going with the breakup angle. Then it seemed like they put a pause on that and went back to them being a tag team. And now they all of a sudden come back to the breakup angle, seemingly out of nowhere to me, because I didn't really see – they kind of dropped little verbal hints last week, but they didn't really seem to indicate it was going to be rushed to this extent to where it happened this week. But – the grin at the end of the match that Baszler had indicated to me that we might be seeing the return of some form of badass NXT Baszler who ran through everybody, who did not give two Fs about anything, and the one who choked out everybody in the Elimination Chamber. I hope we see that Shayna Baszler, and she goes on a run that reasserts not just in kayfabe who she is, but reasserts to everyone that she has that legitimate background to be the dominant woman on the show. I would really like to see her be elevated to that level because she's put in great work over the last couple of years. And I know it's not always about getting your due and whatnot, but she's done what she's been asked of her. She's done it well, sometimes not well, but she's grown. And I really like how she portrays her evil character and the sinister characters. And that's, we have Alexa Bliss with the supernatural stuff, but the person that you want with the realism, the one that can bring that realistic sense of nastiness, that's Shayna Baszler, and I really want to see that in the ring.
Did you sense that Nia Jax against Charlotte tonight was the baby face out of the three, or do you think Shayna Baszler was supposed to do the baby face, or was it two bickering heels and Charlotte was kind of leaning more in the baby face role, the way that all played out?
I think based off the crowd reaction, and the crowd tonight seemed a bit tepid, maybe because they all watched last night. I don't know how many people in Miami attend AEW shows on the regular because of how proximity and whatnot, but it just didn't seem like the crowd was that much into the show tonight, except for at certain key parts like the Omos and Bobby Lashley thing. But based off the match tonight and the reaction, I think they were there for Jax to get in on Baszler, or not Baszler, on Flair. And they weren't as excited when Flair retained. So right. I think Nick was on to a good point that Jax seems to be on that babyface push kind of organically because of how the crowd responded from last week's match. It seems like the crowd is with her and not on Flair's side as well. So I think Jax is supposed to be the face, but the caveat here is that I don't think WWE actually knows who they want to be the face in this scenario yet. They're trying to, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, because, you know, there's what the crowd does, mm-hmm. and then there's what was by design. And I thought Jax was portrayed as the baby face, and Charlotte seemed a little more, in the pre-match promo, more arrogant and irritable, and same thing as the match began. And then, you know, Jax was putting up a good fight, and Baszler cost her the match, but I don't think Jax did anything that we know of to deserve that. So I asked because I thought, maybe I missed something. It was, you know, but I think it came across to me like Baszler's turning heel on Jax, and we're supposed to feel sympathy for Jax, which is interesting because I think if you line those three up a few months ago, you would say, well, you know, the most likely babyface would be Charlotte and then probably Baszler and, you know, certainly not Jax. But I think they're telling that story pretty well because Jax is just kind of coming across as a more self-assured badass in the ring. You know, Charlotte's like, oh, you like to pull my hair? And then Jax kind of took a light slap swing at her, like a slow motion slap, and Charlotte just bumped and bailed out. Uh-huh. Like, that's a heelish move from Charlotte, and Jax was kind of standing up for herself. So I was intrigued by it. I like the idea, if they can get there, of Baszler splitting off from Jax, being a heel, being a badass, being rebuilt, and then being an opponent for one of the top babyface women, especially post-roster shuffle.
Uh-huh.
If they can get her set up to be a heel opponent for Bianca Belair, I like that. And, you know, she's good enough and experienced enough and I think liked well enough behind the scenes that there's, you know, I think Vince McMahon and company would be comfortable for giving her that responsibility, and she's shown certain aspects of that she can carry based on her NXT run. But Vince just didn't know what to do with her in the pandemic era, having a sports-based MMA-style fighter who didn't say much and didn't have much personality. That's just not what he likes, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's his prerogative. He runs a company. We can argue, hey, find a way to make that work. But he was thinking, no, I see something else here I want to go with, and he did. But if we can round that out now to her being a badass heel and we kind of get that it just took a while, that can be fun because, I mean, there'll be some good matches there.
Well, it's interesting you brought up Bianca Belair because the first thing I thought about was reheating her up for another feud with Becky Lynch after that WrestleMania debacle when the pandemic started last year.
Well, Becky's a heel, and so Shayna would have to be the one going face then.
The thing with Becky being a heel, though, is the crowd reactions still give her some of that respectful cheers, and she's also someone who can, on a dime, turn back into a face. And with roster shuffle coming up, we're not sure exactly who's going to end up where. Maybe the champions trade off, maybe the challengers trade, and that could be the whole thing, too. But, excuse me, I agree with you that the best thing out of this little trio here is to make Baszler a dominant, sinister heel and have her be someone that you legitimately fear will take the title off one of the face champions, regardless of which show it's on, because maybe she goes and wins the Rumble and she can have her choice. Maybe you slow build her until she wins Money in the Bank. But either way, she's going to need to be built to be that one threat, regardless of if the champion is Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, Nia Jax, whoever it might be, that they're in the back of their head, they are scared and fearful of Shayna Baszler coming for them.
Yes, I think as of last Friday, I think Becky can succeed as a heel. I think they're absolutely portraying her as a heel. I think Becky's determined to get booed and stay heel. But if the fans don't cooperate, and like you said, tonight they might be feeling it out, how the crowd's reacting to Jackson and Baszler and Charlotte, and they might steer differently based on that. My hunch after Becky's heel, incredible heel and effective heel performance on SmackDown on Friday, and the crowd siding with Bianca against Becky for the most part, which I don't think people thought was likely unless Becky was all on board and did things perfectly. And I think Becky's all on board and doing things perfectly. So it might work that she actually is heel, but the key for that is for her to have babyface opponents who are likable. I mean, it's not going to work if people ultimately don't. It's like with Britt Baker in AEW. She can be a heel, but unless you match her against good babyfaces, no one's going to boo Britt Baker against the babyface that fans aren't that into because they're really into Britt. Well, suddenly Ruby Soho shows up, and you might have that person who AEW's audience is going to cheer against Britt Baker if they tell the story well. So much of a heel turn or a babyface turn or whatever working, if it's against the grain of fan instincts, is the story, the quality of story you tell and how effective that opponent is so that the fan's tendency to go against the grain doesn't matter. They're on board with you. That might work if they line up the right babyface opponents for Becky. And by the way, maybe one of those is Nia Jax.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, we might be seeing Becky and Nia Jax in a title feud and Baszler and Bianca Belair in a title feud come November. I mean, and if they tell a good story to get us there, then more power to them.
Yeah. Hopefully that's what happens.
Yeah. If it's done, hopefully it's done well.
Yes.
All right. Let's bring Kyle into the conversation from Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. We've been talking the women's division. Is that what you want to talk about or something else today?
Well, yeah, but all of that sounds so, I don't know, to me, it doesn't sound realistic, but I mean, it is a prediction, but who knows, but I don't know. The way you said it, it's like, I don't think I want to see that, but, I think go back to Becky real fast. I know it's not a Raw thing, but the whole Becky seeing her being champion or a heel, whatever, stuff like that. It's like, me personally, I don't view Becky as a heel. No, that's just me. I'm never going to boo Becky Lynch at all, no matter what she ever, whatever she did at SummerSlam, whatever. I don't care. Moving on at this point, Becky Lynch. So I don't know, and I think Bianca Belair should go to Raw. Becky stays on SmackDown. Whatever happens with, and then also too with tonight with Charlotte and Alexa. I was into. I've been talking about that a few weeks about Alexa herself to face Charlotte for the champion or just to be the women's champion in general. Because she is the only person I find interesting on Monday Night Raw in the women's division is Alexa Bliss. Only if Alexa goes over to Raw, and I'll be like, oh, SmackDown, I'll be like, ugh. Because she's the only person I find interesting on Monday Night Raw in the women's division, who they've been treating very well and has been kept very strong in terms of not being pinned or never gotten on. She's really in matches in general, but the way they've been booking her, they try to treat her well overall, so even in this character that I don't really fully like, but it's crowd and because she's popular or whatever. But I feel like with Alexa and Charlotte, that's the direction of going in for Extreme Rules. I could see Alexa probably winning the championship at this point. I know it's way too early because Charlotte doesn't want it, but it's like, who else is there for Charlotte if not Alexa? That's at least credible enough right now, heading into Extreme Rules and whatever happens next, whatever, but that's how I view it. What do you think about the whole Alexa Bliss situation and all that?
Yeah, I mean, that is where we are right now. Everything else we're speculating on seems like they're planting seeds for something a month from now. But Charlotte and Bliss, we had Bliss pull a little magic, or just she had time to run to the ring when the lights were out for a while after the backstage interaction on the big screen with Charlotte, although she wasn't very winded, so I'm suspicious it was pre-tape, but whatever the tricks are, they're tricks. So, yeah, she stands behind Charlotte, and Charlotte mouths off back to her. Is the crowd going to be on board with Bliss as the babyface in this feud, or are they going to boo the gimmick? What do you think of this chapter in the story? They'd already, you know, given hints to it, obviously, but this is the first, you know, the most overt establishing of a Bliss Charlotte gimmick after a 2-week interlude with Nia.
Yeah, so Extreme Rules, it happens, and then I think 2 weeks later is when the draft happens. So with that being said, I'm not sure if Bliss actually would take the title because they can do enough in that 2 weeks, like you said. Like, they just did a 2-week to make her a title contender. They could do a 2-week thing until the draft happens to have Flair have someone to face on Raw until the draft happens after Extreme Rules. If Bliss wins, yes, that opens up all the possibilities because she hasn't faced everyone as champion, but with the draft happening right after, again, I'm not sure if that's as likely because of the placement of the draft. If the draft had happened already as it was originally planned to be, then I think a Bliss victory would be more likely. To your point about it being pre-recorded, Bliss's point where she jumped in after Flair talk definitely seemed pre-recorded because the timing was off. Flair hadn't finished speaking yet, and then Bliss jumped in with her part, so it definitely was pre-recorded. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that caught that, but you know, the how it played out, it's interesting because what does it mean for Bliss and Lily to bring the playground to the ring when the last several times we've seen the playground, people have been getting jumped in the playground, but nothing really supernatural has happened. You know, whether it's Eva Marie and Doudrop jumping Bliss or someone else getting jumped in the back, coming into her set, the playground hasn't really functioned as much of anything besides a fight pit. And so I'm just interested to see if this means that she's going to bring out the supernatural in the lead up to the match, or if she also brings it out in the match and what that means for this character and for Flair, because Flair's acting the last couple of weeks with her including more of the queen sayings and mannerisms and poses. I don't know if you saw it in her backstage promo, but she kind of had little motions to go along with her sayings. It's getting to a point of being, I guess, annoying, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that kind of overacting along with Bliss is going to mesh well.
Kyle, back to you. Your follow-up.
But the women's division in general, Raw, the standard lasts pretty much every single time I watch Raw and I call in. It's just the fact that it's just not good and just only focus on who they want to focus on, whether it is Charlotte or Becky or Sasha or Bayley. It's like, again, a thing where they always focus on them four, at least on Raw, and they try not to do little bits of stuff that's happening with either Alexa or Shayna and I, which I don't understand why they're still a team, but it looks like they're going to break up, which is a kind of a good thing. And then you talk about Shayna Baszler possibly going to be interesting, but obviously Bianca would like going to Raw, so there's having Bianca on Raw and having Charlotte and Bianca to have a face off, because they had like that one match at NXT and then they never faced each other ever again, so I could see that happening at some point. And then, I mean, who knows, but I could see that and involving we'll see what happens with that. But I do like what Alexa's doing, but more wrestling, but I'm not going to get that, so I might as well just accept it. I guess the last thing is it's about the tag team situation and also about Bobby Lashley and Randy Orton. I was actually like, I was thinking for the last few weeks, like, I was thinking for stuff, who's going to face Bobby Lashley at Extreme Rules? I was thinking of that for a while. Now that would be Randy Orton, which is, I guess, makes the most logical sense and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking too while I was watching tonight as well, is that I thought they were going to do the tag team match at Extreme Rules and then right after do the World Championship match at on the same night and not next week, which kind of is a good thing because it was kind of like, you know, I don't want to see two matches in one show already. So, but what do you think for what will be next for Bobby Lashley going? Do you think he's going to retain at Extreme Rules if gets ready? Then what's going to be next with him moving forward, heading into the end of this year, beginning of, you know, I guess, well, beyond Randy Orton, what will be next for Bobby Lashley?
Yeah, so Ryan's tonight. Almas gives Lashley the head vice slam. It's not a choke slam when you grab the guy on the side of his head. So let's stop calling it a choke slam. It's a head vice slam. And then in that scene that you, Jimmy Smith. And then as soon as Lashley stood, Orton entered the ring and delivered an RKO. The stare down, the intensity, there's been hints dropped. Orton against Lashley and getting there via a tag team feud. Bruce, is that seem obviously where they're going? Is there another path that they might be taking? Does it not go beyond the tag team situation as we head into Extreme Rules?
I think, Wade, you're not going to be surprised by my answer, and that is Lashley should retain, and he should retain until WrestleMania, until he faces who? Brock Lesnar. That's the match I've been pushing for months and months and months, ever since Lashley was on the path to becoming WWE champion. I've been saying save Lashley and Lesnar for WrestleMania, and I hope that's where they go. Now, I was with Kyle that I thought they were going to have double duty at Extreme Rules, but I'm glad they didn't, because I don't know how many of us could handle two Randy Orton matches in one night and all the mid-match rear chin locks he would apply. So I'm glad that's not happening. But this seems, you know, Orton's one of those you could just plug into a title match with a 1 or 2 week build. And fans are fine with that because he has the credibility and the cachet to kind of do that. And the fact that he's a current champion also adds to that credibility. One thing I do want to highlight is how Bobby Lashley takes the RKO bumps. That man bumps for those things like a champ. He just goes limp. His body goes flat limp. And he's just prone on the ground looking like he is completely knocked out. So props to you, champ. Amazing bumps. You know, Lashley has been on another level since he's become WWE champion, and since he's made the Hurt Business just him and MVP again, he's really stepped up his promos, his intensity, how he's able to tell a story through his facial expressions, I think, has been something that has really improved throughout his tenure as WWE champion. And it's because of these reasons that I think he should retain and still be in line to face Lesnar at WrestleMania, because I don't think Lesnar is going to beat Reigns in Blood Money 4 or 5, whatever the number this is anymore. So for me, what I would like to see is Lashley retain, Lesnar come over in the draft, and then they pretty much set us on a path for Lashley Lesnar WrestleMania.
All right, very good. Kyle, thanks for the call as always. Any closing words from you?
Yeah, I think my last point I'll leave with this is Damian Priest going out there and shares again, and then his match with Drew McIntyre, how stiff that match was and really good, how and everything. And the increase has been winning, and it's cool to see. And then the three matches with Sheamus, we're looking forward to as well. And look forward to what Damian Priest is going to be doing moving forward, because he's the male highlight for me on Raw in terms of what I like to see every single week on Raw. He's been great, but that's it. Thanks for the call.
Cool. Thanks, Kyle. Yeah, Damian Priest continues to get a push. He got a backstage interview and talked about after the Drew Sheamus match, and those are always hard-hitting and intense. And we can talk about that match, too. Then Priest got to address facing Sheamus. What do you think of that match? What do you think of Priest afterwards and kind of the whole setup?
I mean, as expected between these two, a hard-hitting, snug, very intense match. But I really like the story they told throughout the match, where it was based around, one, Sheamus' face mask, and two, each wrestler busting out moves of the other to try and gain the advantage and the victory, right? Whether it's McIntyre turning Sheamus's 10 beats of the bedroom around on him, whether it's Sheamus going for the Claymore and missing and hitting the Alabama Slam instead, and McIntyre hitting White Noise, things like that. I like that story and the ending, how it was around the face mask that had been used against McIntyre multiple times up until that point. And I think the best part of the match, even though this is one of those rare times where if they didn't go to roll up finishes so much, that this would have been so much more effective, because I feel, correct me if I'm wrong, but off memory, I feel like all of their matches previously have ended after a finisher was hit, not with a roll up. And so for this to end after a roll up to counter the Claymore, which I thought was going to be the finish, I thought was just a nice kiss on the top of the, of what a great match it was. And yeah, McIntyre got his bit afterwards, but for Priest, you have to set him up with a babyface for him to continue his babyface push. And I emailed you last week, and I made the prediction in my report last week that Damian Priest, I'm picking right, you know, last week to win the Royal Rumble match in January. I think he's on that trajectory, and if you want to continue on that trajectory, you can't have him face McIntyre really in his first full-fledged singles feud as United States champion. It has to be a heel. And who better than Sheamus, who can take losses and be Teflon? He's fine, especially this revamped Sheamus we've seen since the beginning of 2021.
What do you think of the Drew Sheamus dynamic at the end? Was there a moment where you thought, are they turning Drew heel based on how he's handling this and the way that played out with the body language and the facial expressions, or did that not cross your mind at all?
In a vacuum, I would say that thought that crossed my mind, but we've seen too many times the last couple of weeks where heel or faces have actually attacked heels from behind the back, like Doudrop to Eva Marie last week, for example. And because of that, I'm not reading too much into any pre- or post-match attacks because it seems like everyone's doing them regardless of their disposition as a face or a heel. But I can see your concern there. And to be fair, I've always advocated that the 3-2-1 Drew McIntyre, it's too over the top for me, and he's actually better off as a brooding heel. But he can also go over the top there. So it's really fine balancing to define if they're going to really make him a heel here.
I wasn't disappointed to see Sheamus against Drew again, but I know that's a match that's happening kind of like Cesaro and Seth. It's a means to an end. It's not, you know, they're putting it out there as a TV match. It's sort of like Saturday Night's Main Event. After it hit, after the house show circuit, Hogan's beat, you know, whoever he's facing on Saturday Night's Main Event at the house show circuit, then we put it on national TV and let him win one final time. And so a match like that, you're like, all right, this is a means to an end. This is, you know, it's to fill some TV time, give you some good action, but tell a larger story. And Drew is somebody who I think the idea is don't do any more damage until the shakeup. Until
so
the draft.
Here's my question to you, Wade. Who do you have McIntyre with until the shakeup, or do you even have him with anybody? Do you take him off TV? What do you do?
I'm not against I would normally be against taking him off TV, you know, because he is an important piece of this. I mean, he killed some time with Jinder Mahal, who's, you know, just kind of, you know, once again, I will argue rightfully so, just kind of lost in the mix, and that's fine. But, I mean, looking at the roster, I mean, it's not that long of a span, so I wouldn't be against taking him off TV for a while. I mean, I don't know.
He can record promos and everything, too, to fill the time if they need be, just so that he's still in the minds of viewers, but I'm really not sure if there's anyone left right now where you put him into without forcing him down the card.
I mean, I wouldn't like hate if they teamed him with a decent baby face. I'm trying to think of Retribution. What are their names? T-Bar and Mace. Mace.
T-Bar and Mace, yeah.
So Mace, yeah. So if T-Bar and Mace, let's say they, and I'm just spitballing here. They, Humberto Carrillo's running after the 24/7 title. And Mace and T-Bar, like, just, like, stick their leg out and trip him. And then he gets it up and gets in their face. And then they just pummel him 2-on-1. And then Drew sees it, and he makes a save. And all of a sudden, it's like Drew and Humberto against Mace and T-Bar. And Drew mentors Humberto a little bit. And Mace and T-Bar are bullies. They beat him up a lot. But ultimately, Drew gets the claymore and knocks him out and pins him. You could tell a 2 or 3 week story to fill some time with that. So my point there is maybe you can get something out of Drew being on TV. He can be out there with, I mean, Drew and Dominik Dijakovic. I want to see that. Like, give me that.
Yeah.
So if you can give me a 2-3 week story to fill some time without Drew being in the world title picture or a singles feud, and you give a little rub to Humberto, who I still think has an upside that's worth investing in other than 24/7, you ask me the question, that's my answer. That's an example of something that I think you could do with Drew, that he could sink his teeth into and come out stronger. And it wouldn't feel like moving him down the card because he'd be a guy standing up for somebody who was being bullied.
Sure. Nope. I see that. Yeah, that would definitely work. And it would definitely help give Carrillo another rub after his feud with Sheamus from earlier in the year.
Yep. All right. Very good. Let's go to I never gave out the phone number, by the way, and we're lighter on calls. It's a holiday night here. So if you're listening live streaming and you want to jump in line and jump on board, the number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. If you don't do that, You'll just be in the background. We won't bring you on the show. Pushing one flags you on the switchboard. And we'd love to hear from some new callers. If you've been listening live, jump on in and let us know what you think of anything we've talked about or a topic we have not covered yet, including John Morrison and Karen Cross, which we'll get to in a moment. Oh, by the way, speaking of call-in shows, last night after AEW All Out, Mike McMahon from the All Elite After Show on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup guest-hosted for Greg Parks. Happy birthday, Greg. And just had a ton of calls and a long discussion a couple hours after All Out, including Joel Donnell, a familiar voice on the post shows after Dynamite. He joined in and talked about what it was like to be in the building last night. And Todd Martin and Rich Van and I did a post All Out roundtable that lasted nearly 2 hours. We did over a half hour at the beginning just on Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole, and we got into CM Punk. And then I did a Way Keller hotline over 45 minutes afterwards, running down the show and talking about why All Out was so good, despite in some key ways being on the lower end of expectations in certain key respects. But it didn't matter at the end because AEW has such a deep roster and had such goodwill and built and had these surprises and these big moments that it didn't matter that, like, CM Punk sort of had, I mean, I know some people really liked it, but an okay match. You know, Eric Kroll attended and wrote last night going, man, that was flat, you know, in the building for Punk and, you know, on the lower end of expectations. And there were a bunch of matches that were under 3 stars, like almost every match I had under 3 stars. And that you can, but if you have that 4.5 to 5 star tag match with the Bucks and Lucha Bros, and you have a solid main event with a who cared what happened in the main event post-match angles series with a great swerve with Cole, and then you've got Minoru Suzuki as a pleasant surprise and brilliant use of Ruby Soho. Like, we're not going to test her and reformat her and break her down before we build her up. We're going to take advantage of WWE's reputation for not seeing something in someone and then underpushing them for years, and then give them a chance right out of the gate. So I did 45-plus minutes giving my star ratings, explaining why I gave them the ratings I gave them, and talking about that interesting dynamic of a show getting high 90s for thumbs up and yet and A grades from the vast majority in the poll that I cited. And yet there was a number of things that were sort of disappointing about it. Bruce, you're making noise in the background. We'll chime in with this.
Yeah, no, I think, one, as Mike McMahon kind of said, last night, kind of the temerity of Tony Khan to not just have Adam Cole debut, but less than 5 minutes later have Bryan Danielson debut. Like, that in itself is a very confident move. Some might say arrogant, but it definitely worked out. And it created that moment to where people don't even remember sort of what happened before, even overlooking, like, they'll talk about it, but the main talking point isn't the tag team match, which is one of the best tag team matches you'll ever see, but it's the debuts. And it's because those moments were created. And the goodwill they have with fans, it's the fact that these surprises were expected and they didn't fail on them. They delivered, right? It's not something like where WWE promises something and then you don't get what they promised, or you get some facsimile of what they promised. They've been delivering ever since the Christian Cage debut. They've been delivering on their kind of announcements and their build-ups. And like you said, some things weren't that great last night. Not all the matches were, you know, in ring quality-wise, pay-per-view worthy. But they made it work. And I was thinking about Ruby Soho. I let out an exasperated sigh when you were talking about her, because I know Tom Staupe and I have just gushed about her for years since her NXT days, because she is an absolute ring general. I think back to the match where Brie Bella accidentally knocked out Liv Morgan on Raw. Who took over? Ruby Riott, Ruby Soho. She's the one who took over the match and got everyone back on track and went from there. She is the perfect person to put into that women's division, anchor basically the face side, and to help just in terms of match quality, the rest of that division, because that is what she does. She is an amazing ring worker, great character, unique look. She stands out. She's going to be amazing in AEW, which is one of those other things where the people in WWE just have a specific image of what they think a pro wrestler or sports entertainer, I should say, should be. And because she didn't fit that, they didn't know what to do with her. And they're going to miss out extremely bad with Ruby Soho, because she is going to do amazing work in AEW, and I'm very excited for what she does moving forward.
So I brought up the call-in show with Mike McMahon because that's available right now for free.
Uh-huh.
Everybody, just search PW Torch on your podcast app if you haven't done yet. Subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, a different show each day of the week covering a different specific theme or topic with different hosts. Great mix of voices and opinions. And that includes last night's AEW All Out post show, a couple hours of phone calls, on-site correspondent, and a pro podcaster in Mike McMahon. Hopefully you're listening to him and Andrew Socek cover AEW every week also.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be, by the way, I'll get to the email I was about to go to in a second here, but NXT and the art we saw tonight, again, the artist rendering of that new venue and that music. I don't even know exactly how to describe the music to somebody who doesn't hear it, but
it's Wale, I'm pretty sure.
It is Wale, yeah. Like what's the subgenre of what we're hearing there?
I mean, it would fall under the hip hop, but I was like, tell my students, yeah, hip hop is more than just rap, so I just call it rap. But it's probably more under kind of like, I don't know, I'm not a big Wale fan, but
yeah.
It seems more like a southern pop, a southern rap to me, like a southern rap feel to me. So,
yeah,
but
that's the thing. Like I like the sound. I've always been an advocate for reinventing how wrestling is shot and how it looks. And, you know, NXT has a more limited budget than SmackDown or AEW for that matter. And they're in the Performance Center, which is a small venue. And what are they going to do to refresh it? And on SmackDown on Friday, right after they showed the artist rendering of the arena and the new logo and the Wale song, then there was a Subway commercial. And it's Seth Curry saying, sometimes to be fresh, you got to refresh. And I was like, that's so perfect. That's NXT needed a freshening up. I might hate this. I might think they've gone way too far. It's lost its head. But I'm for trying something new. And this looks like just a way to kind of jolt pro wrestling fans into going, what is going on here? And I know the initial reaction was sort of silly, like it's a kid's logo. And it's like, that's not a kid's logo. I mean, you're not.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that's bad. I mean, but just be blunt. That's bad graphic arts knowledge. If you think that color scheme and the splash paint and all that with Wale in the background, especially, it's like, no, that's not a kid's thing at all. I think it's really sophisticated and really cool. I don't know if it works with wrestling, and I want to see what they have in mind and how they pull it off. I'm eager for that. So the PWT Talks NXT crew, Kelly Wells last Tuesday night goes, you know, I don't think the sky is falling. It just seems like maybe this is going to be it, just some small tweaks. We've heard all these rumors, and then all of a sudden it's like, one more normal show, and then it's blow it up and start over again. I'm so interested to hear what Tom Stout and Nate Lindberg and Kelly Wells have to say on tomorrow night's show after the final. This is tomorrow night's the final version of NXT as we know it,
uh-huh,
before the complete reboot. I'm nervous, but, you know, it's not a red-hot NXT product. Their viewership isn't bad, really. When you compare it to AEW, AEW gets all this buzz. They're not that far behind AEW for a promotion with a much smaller budget, but they are behind them. And
yeah,
I think Vince wants to see, you know, can we close that gap? Can we make USA Network more happy? And can we have NXT serve our purposes better? We don't want it to be the landing place for people in 205 for 205 Live, you know, size wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his prerogative. We can argue and disagree and think it's short-sighted and narrow-minded, but it's his business. And NXT, frankly, largely became almost indistinguishable from 205 Live when it came to the size of the wrestlers who were getting featured and pushed. So he wants to change that. So let's see what he can do. Is the show going to be way worse or just different but okay or even better? I'm along for the ride. It's newsworthy from my chair. I'm not talking about people in NXT who were invested in what they were doing, just for me. I'm interested to see what Vince – And God, John Laurinaitis, have in mind, and Bruce Pritchard, and Kevin Dunn, whatever, what they, you know, the touch they put on that. So this is kind of a long, winding, hopefully interesting conversation that is also plugging the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, because it's an interesting time with AEW and NXT in particular to tune in this week. So again, search PW Torch and download.
And not to turn this into PWT Talks NXT too much,
yeah,
but judging off social media reactions, you and I were kind of in the minority in saying that the logo change isn't bad. And I messaged Tom. I said, it looks like a final project in an undergraduate kind of digital DTC kind of class, a graphic design kind of class, right? Like a,
yeah,
like a final,
yep,
project. And
yep,
the renderings I saw, I like the renderings of the arena and what it looks like. And maybe the color will be too much. But like you said, they need to do something different. They need to try and change it up. And the dark and gritty sort of atmosphere, aesthetic of NXT, I've never been a fan of that aesthetic as much as I loved NXT. And yeah. So I'm excited to see the shift. And I think this shift, as much as Triple H's booking NXT was good, a lot of the presentation was geared towards a certain type of fan and audience. And to be frank, I am not that certain type of fan or audience. So I'm excited to see the introduction of Wally as one good point to reach out to try and get others involved. But this rebrand, the sky is falling mentality, I think we get into having too reactionary when it comes to WWE because of all the things that have happened in the past, and yet they're still here. So we should give them that, at least that much credit.
Yeah, yeah. I am intrigued, interested. Bring it on, and let's see what you got, and we'll evaluate it. But it's I'm for change. I'm for change here. I get it. And like I said, I want to know what Kelly, Tom, and Nate say too. So check that out. Cool. And yeah, and then I talked about the VIP roundtable, 2 hours of that, the Weight Killer Hotline, 45 minutes of my just, solo take on All Out and kind of my perspective on how it underperformed or was on the low end of expectations in some areas. And it ultimately didn't matter because so many other things came through. So go VIP to hear that. And then also hear shows like this with the ads removed. Tons of benefits. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. A lot of people coming on board to check out our CM Punk coverage now. What they do with Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson in the mix, and then who knows what's next. And hey, shout out to Ruby Soho, Bruce. Uh-huh. And I'm intrigued by that too. And then of course you got John Moxley on the New Japan, who's next tour.
That's gonna be a match. That's gonna be a fantastic match.
Yep. So fun stuff. It's a really fun time to be a wrestling fan. And SmackDown was so good on Friday.
Uh-huh.
What's going on with Reigns and the Usos and Heyman and other, but it's other things too now. I covered VIP members. I covered Rampage on Friday night because it was on the eve of All Out. And then I covered SmackDown on my hotline on Saturday. But, and I took a little more time to watch SmackDown because I didn't host the post show. So thank you, Zach Adorn. So I was able to take a little bit more time watching SmackDown and rewind a little bit and be a little more detailed. And so I covered that on Saturday for VIP members. And yeah, I just really there's a lot about that show that I liked. And so it's with NXT and some good things on WWE main roster with a roster shakeup coming up, and then AEW with, I don't know how many bullet points you can say are just exciting about what they're doing. I mean, when CM Punk is like the sixth biggest story on a pay-per-view and it's his first match and it's in Chicago, and you're talking about the tag team title match, Adam Cole, Bryan Danielson, Minoru Suzuki, and Ruby Soho. I mean, you could argue that what Punk did was the sixth most fun thing to talk about and sixth most important thing on that show.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Nobody else chimed in on the phone lines while we were talking there. So again, phone lines open, give us push one or give us a call. But I want to get to this email and I want to talk about Doc Karrion Kross and that interview. So we'll begin our email segment here with Zach in Texas. After the greatness we all bore witness to last night, I didn't even have the energy to get worked up at Raw tonight. It was really just a ho-hum show by comparison. Anyway, this is Zach in Texas, who loves AEW and is WWE's not for him, and we hear why. The women's division continues to be an embarrassment, though. The women's tag team champions never win, yet they defend the titles. Yet never defend the titles, excuse me. How did Rhea Ripley and Nikki get a championship contenders match? Are we calling it that? Before Tegan and Shotzi get their title match anyway. Poor Charlotte went from a feud with a woman who legit hurts people to a feud with a doll. Speaking of irredeemable force, it appears they're going to try to position Nia as face in a feud with Shayna. I agree. They can't think anyone other than Wade is going to cheer her. Maybe the locker room, Zach. Maybe the locker room.
Maybe.
And then there's Piper Niven. While I agree with her that Eva Marie is a wretched, talentless wench, I really don't need to see another match between the two. You would think WWE would rather try after last night. You'd think they'd try after last night, but we should know better by now. So Zach is if nothing else, consistent in his thoughts on Nia Jax. He did bring up a couple other topics, though. I mean, Tegan and Shotzi, you know, not exactly – they don't have a lot of momentum right now. But the Doudrop, or Piper Niven, as people who refuse to call her by her ring name, her current name, and I get it, she, you know, cut a promo about Eva Marie and did a couple Evolution-type plays on words. Are you okay with this? Totally not okay with it? Where are you now that they have broken them up?
Well, to play devil's advocate a little bit here to Zach, they didn't actually have a match last week. So,
that's true,
you
yeah.
know, it would be a first match between them, not a rematch. Second, I was okay with this until she started dropping in Doudrop Illusion and things like that. Like, please just don't. I understand you want to get back at her. It just makes you look stupid, though, like actually making these words up. But the thing is, throughout all the promos tonight, one thing that was a through line between all of them is WWE's incessant need to get in catchphrases. Karrion Kross is trying to be menacing, and he has to get in, fall, and pray at the very end, no matter what, for example. And I know you're going to get to Kross here soon. So the thing with Doudrop and Eva Marie, I think WWE understands what this is. And if you listen to her promo tonight, she said she wanted to make sure she got at Marie before Marie could get out of the match, as she's done in the past and has a history of doing. So from that perspective, what she did last week makes sense. It still shouldn't be what the babyface does, you know, attacking a heel from behind prior to a match. But I think Eva Marie is a heel that has so much go-away heat that anything done to her physically in the ring, whether it's before the match, during the match, or after the match, is going to be seen as a face move. So I think in that regard, Doudrop will be okay, but what happens after, I think, just like with McIntyre after Mahal, that's what's going to be important for Doudrop, is what happens after Marie.
Yes. I mean, Eva Marie's there to be a lightning rod for heat, mm-hmm. and I think WWE's in on the joke, mm-hmm. and they like laughing at fans who get all worked up over the fact that she is unqualified on the mic or in the ring, is only there for her looks. And they are leaning in on that, and I think enjoying the outrage. Now, whether that backfires on them because fans are like, yeah, we're outraged because we get that you think the joke is she can't wrestle and she can't talk, but she's good looking, so we're going to give her TV time. But we resent you for putting her on TV in place of wrestlers who can talk and can wrestle. So yeah. It's not a good kind of heat, but I think WWE is aware and intentional in the type of heat that they're getting. I just think, you know, it's an ill-advised strategy to yeah. laugh at your customers who are angry with the product that you're choosing to give them, or at least one aspect of it. All right. Thanks, Zach. I genuinely always appreciate and look forward to your points of view. All right, let's go to 434. Join us here. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Johnny Fairplay from Danville, Virginia.
Hey, Johnny. Wow, what a treat. This is
I'm honored.
I did not watch Raw tonight. I was doing a podcast. I apologize, but I just had to call because last week I feel like the heel Wade character, who is probably my favorite wrestling personality in 2021, to be honest with you, infiltrated its way outside of the fix onto almost every show, and I think it was it was what Raw has done to you week after week after week, but the AEW pay-per-view was so great that we got Face Wade back on the after shows. And I just wanted to say welcome back to Face Wade.
Now, wait. Why did you think my heel Wade infiltrated all the other shows? What do you recall in that regard?
Oh wow, you and Jason, like, you know, I attempt to be the voice of reason and try to be positive Johnny in 2020, and Jason's like, no, and Jason was just being Jason Powell, you know, as great as, and you're like, no, here's evil, no, here's, I'm like, oh my God, Neil Wade is working with Jason, this is like, what's going on in this world? So, but I do have a question. Are you rethinking the 4.5 stars on the tag match, or are you good with that?
I said on the Wade Keller outline last night, I had an issue with the finish, and I am not, yeah, and I am not Hinton who called last night on the Mike McMahon post show?
Yes, he's the one who tempered everyone's expectations a little bit during the show.
Yeah, but he had brought up, when all four guys are standing in a square, uh-huh. super kicking each other and no selling and popping up and super kicking and no selling and popping up. It's like, I know some people like that, and I'm in the category that don't love that stuff. I like, there were certain things in that match that I went into detail on this, but I think a five-star match is closer to a main event on a pay-per-view that's a culmination of a personal rivalry and a feud where the fans aren't invested in it because it's a great match. They're invested in it because there's a story. And I know there's a history between those teams, and the announcers did a nice job bringing that up. That story was not told artfully and deliberately on Dynamite. This match was a result of a weak eliminator four-person tournament with a cage predetermined. And they went in there without that backstory. So the match was great. The match was, as I wrote at the time, fantastic. And I am stingy on star ratings relative to a lot of very overly generous star ratings out there. So all of that said, I'm still – and I haven't rewatched the match. I just didn't have time today to rewatch it. And I'm going to – and I'll adjust up if I think I was, quote, too hard on it, calling it fantastic and 4.5 stars, which is probably one of the top 5-star ratings I'll give out in the next 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. I'm not just going to, like, say, oh, that was 5 stars, because there's things about that style that, for me, aren't at that once. I mean, it's not that I have a rule that I only give a 5-star rating out once every 3 years. But I think there's something about a 5-star rating that says, for what we're seeing in wrestling today, this is a notch better and an example of perfection of a certain realm that the star rating giver also has a proclivity for and loves. And I get some people want to give that 5 stars. I have different tastes and things that irritate me a little bit about the Buck style and frankly, Lucha Bros style too. Mm-hmm. And those were present. So I can love a match and think it's fantastic and give it one of my premier star ratings, but not see it on first viewing and go, that was the perfect match that is tied for perfect with any other match that I could possibly see of this era. So that's kind of my take on it, Johnny. I don't know what you thought. What do you think?
I'm with, like, the super kick stuff. I'm cool with that 5 minutes earlier in the match. I felt like it was too late into the match to do that. Like, I mean, it's almost comedy. So it's,
it's comedy. It's Three Stooges slapstick stuff that some people love. And I don't judge other people liking different styles than me at all, but I'm going to express what my thoughts are on that style. Go ahead, Johnny.
Uh-huh. Well, I do like it, but I like it five minutes earlier in that.
Yeah,
match.
There you go. Yep. That's actually a really nuanced point, and I think a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the finish with Penta jumping right up, I was like, oh. So for me, I'm stingy on stars too. I think I'm right up. So I didn't like Penta jumping up. I personally liked Hangman Page and Kenny versus the Bucks last year better, because I thought the drama going into it was better, and I thought the drama during the match for me personally was better. Do I think the match I saw Saturday night was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen, and like a match that I will show, wrestling fans and non-wrestling fans that have never seen it for years to come? Yep. So, but me personally, I like the Hangman Page Kenny tag match against the Bucks better, and like I would put that, if that's not 5 stars, that's 4.75 for me. And probably the last 5-star match I saw was any of the Kenny versus Okada matches, and that's been a while.
And I gave Page and Omega against the Young Bucks 4.75 stars. I had it a notch better.
Yeah, I'm like you, Wade. I like the story. And so for me, that's the best tag match I've seen in AEW. Even though in a vacuum, Saturday was fantastic, considering the entire journey that we went on with both of those teams leading into Revolution, I think that was probably the best tag team match I've seen in my lifetime.
If we take away star ratings, I called the Lucha Bros and Young Bucks in the cage fantastic, and I called Page and Omega against the Bucks stupendous. So there you go. Stupendous trumps fantastic. And it was, I don't think the Bucks Lucha Bros should have been longer, but Page and Omega was, 30 minutes. It felt more epic. It felt more like a culmination of something. It was third on the show. It wasn't in the main event spot. But yeah, I liked it a little better. And like I said, I just, there's no star rating rule book for, you know, there's no objective star rating system, you know, and I've got mine and I've done it for 30 years. Other people have other ways that they divvy them out, and that's fine. And, you know, I give Sean Radican a hard time. If you want to know what I think of a match, subtract a star from Sean's rating, and that's where I am almost all the time, or three-quarter stars. I think he's more generous, but you work that in. You just understand. Same with a movie reviewer, you know, whatever. You kind of know what they like and how they rate.
I'm with you. So as I said, thank you, AEW, for bringing back face Wade to everyone else, and that I can secretly enjoy heel Wade on the fix, parts 1, 2, and sometimes 3.
Or so, 4. I know the reason they go VIP.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes part, yeah, essentially part. Hour 4. Johnny, have you watched most WWE lately?
Yeah, I've been doing pretty good. Tonight, just with Labor Day weekend, pushed everything kind of chaotic, and so I had to do my Patreon podcast stuff. So I didn't get to watch any, but...
Johnny, hold on. I'm going to ask you a follow-up on that, but you have 15 seconds. Get in a plug. Go.
AdFreeNSFW.com. That's it.
Hang on. 10, 12, 13, 14, 15. All right, I gave you time. You could have filled that better, but okay.
Yeah,
you stuck to one thing.
I'm
it's
good,
memorable. No, your time's up. You can't do anything else. You had your 15 seconds.
But no, I did,
so what do you
I did Q&A tonight. I had enough questions. It took me over an hour. I'm good. If I don't get any more patrons, I'm okay.
Oh, okay. Well, good. So Johnny says no more patrons.
Do not isolate that and use that as your tweet.
He's doing it right now.
That's awesome. No, I'm glad you're a good guy, and I'm despite what some people who knew you in the past say, genuinely. And I'm happy for your success and that you've got to really you know, you're good at what you do. And you're really diving in, and it's great that you've been able to have this passion and succeed with it.
Oh, thank you. So and thank you for as I said, as soon as I finish with my stuff, I'm jumping onto yours. So I think that screams volumes as to what
awesome.
You're bringing
that's
to the
awesome.
Table.
So, I have a question, John.
Awesome. Yeah. So,
go ahead.
Well, get back to Raw Talk. I apologize, Johnny,
hold on.
What's that?
It's my podcast. Don't start running it. Bruce has a question for you. He was about to ask you a question.
Oh, I didn't know.
I don't care if you
have
Go ahead, Bruce.
Johnny, first time, thank you. And my question to you is, we had a discussion earlier on what would you do with Lashley moving forward. What would you do with Lashley moving forward? Do you have him retained against Orton at Extreme Rules? And then if you do, what do you do from there? And if you have him lose, then what do you do from there?
Ooh, I don't have him lose to Orton. Oh, Jesus. I don't know. Actually, what number is Orton on his title reigns? Is he close to Flair?
I think he's at 14.
Yeah.
Do you let him be the guy? I don't know. Did you guys bring that point up? I mean, like, someone has to be the guy. I mean, right now Cena is tied with Rick. Can you? I mean, for me, I think Ric Flair is the greatest wrestler of all time. I just love Ric Flair. Was I a Cena fan during most of his reigns? No, but like, do I get? Like, I think he's a pretty awesome dude. I mean, like, I do as much stuff as I can for Give Kids the World charity that works directly with Make-A-Wish Kids. So I see on one level what John does. And I mean, other than Disneyland, he is the number one Make-A-Wish giver ever. That's pretty freaking awesome. So if he's tied with Ric Flair with 16, I don't have a problem with that. But, like, if I'm Vince McMahon, do you want Randy to be the guy with 17? Maybe.
I think it makes a little bit of a mockery out of the frequency of title reigns when Randy has never been that dominant generational centerpiece act. He's just been that notch short. And if he trumps Flair and Cena, you're sort of drawing attention to the notion that, you know, frequency doesn't mean greatness. And I mean, I don't want to, you know, be hard on Randy. He's a legacy star and he's contributed a lot and, you know, he's had his ups and downs and all that, but he's not been, and they've wanted to make him that guy, but he just hasn't succeeded where there's like a 3-year run. That's just, that's the Randy era. So I don't know. I don't like stacking up title wins for him for that reason, but you know, Lashley and Lesnar can be a lot of fun if they keep Lashley strong and build to that.
Yeah, no, I wanted Lashley-Lesnar before Lashley or before Roman Lesnar personally. I guess it makes it could potentially be better in that if we get Brock versus Roman and Roman wins, and then an upset Brock gets traded brands or whatever and ends up against Lashley and beats Lashley, and that's what they're looking to do. I'm okay. I mean, I went to that Charlotte Super Show a few weeks back. I mean, like, sold out, you know, 14 plus thousand people in Charlotte for a house show. And I'm just like, holy moly. And Bobby Lashley, it was him and MVP versus, was it Drew and Damian Priest maybe? And Bobby Lashley, it's just like, he's a stud. I mean, like his presence, because I saw him back in TNA and I saw him in his first run. I was at the WrestleMania with Trump and all that. I think that was Detroit or whatever. And he's a different dude. And there's something really special there. So, you know, if you want him to beat Brock, if you want to... So him with the belt to me, or championship rather, it's a belt. I like it, but give him something to sink his teeth into. Like I just really wish we were in the 90s and like you could have like a good looking baby face that you know the girls would cry over and the kids would cry, you know, like I wish we had that character and we don't, because I would love to watch Bobby Lashley destroy that character just over and over again.
Agreed.
But that's me. So but yeah, no, I'm anxious for cool. the switching brands to see what I mean.
Yeah.
They get some stale products, and I think they have a very stale product, and I think SmackDown's fun. I enjoy every time I watch SmackDown.
SmackDown's been good, yeah.
for the most part. So my only concern is, you know, do they ruin SmackDown?
Oh, I know. I'm worried, but you know, I don't want to be cynical about it. I mean, hopefully we can. Yeah. It's not a net zero game. Is that the right way to use that phrase? Like, hopefully SmackDown can stay great and Raw can become better. So I hope that's the case with a shakeup, because we're, you know, on SmackDown, I mean, we're seeing a good to very good version of what Vince McMahon is attempting to do. We, you know, week after week, month after month, SmackDown is some good talent coming together with some good writing and some nice long-term storytelling and nuance. You know, yeah, I mean, it's tough with the three-hour show. I mean, I should just start every episode of the podcast. We know Raw should be 2 hours, not three. Let's not talk about it. I mean, it is, you know, I don't know how many years. But, you got to say it sometimes. I mean, it's true. It's just 3 hours is too long for a wrestling show, Nick Khan. And it costs you in ways that are not tangibly measurable, but actually it's happening. You know, and I know networks are paying crazy money per hour for anything to keep cable relevant right now. And WWE, I get, you know, slurping up the rights fees while they can, but they pay the price in other ways, but ways they don't care about right now. So whatever. All right, Johnny, any closing words?
No, thanks. Thanks for everything. I'll keep listening and looking forward to one of my favorite shows each and every week, The Fix.
Awesome. Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny.
Surprise special run-in from Johnny Fairplay. That was fun. Okay, let's go back to the inbox here. Joe B. from Jacksonville. We haven't talked about this, so let's do this. I sat through all of Raw for the first time in a while and inspired the same sense of apathy in me as it always does, as it feels like they want to fill 3 hours to get their money. Hey, we were just talking about that, Joe. with that said, the highlight of the show for me was this guy, Reginald. I saw Tozawa in a Spirit of Halloween bargain karate outfit and had low expectations. Reginald then goes completely insane with Ricochet and old Dragon Gate style insanely smooth flying. I have no idea if he can string an actual match together. He can't. But my last fan eyes love this guy. Is he actually in an act they're invested in, or another 24/7 goof? Thanks and go VIP. No, he's not a serious wrestler. He is a novelty. Do you like this brief? Is it a brief, harmless sidebar to that helped break up a 3-hour Raw, or is it just, you know, nonsense and a waste of time?
If it was AAW, it'd be a nonsense and waste of a time. But being that this is Vince McMahon's sport as entertainment, it definitely fits within the bubble of Raw. And there's definitely a place for it because of the reaction from fans. And some of that has to do with the fact that WWE markets itself more towards families. And when you have kids, a lot of things that stand out to the kids are the things that seem supernatural or superhero-like. And when someone's leaping off of a ramp or leaping off of some kind of springboard and flying through the ring and then flying out of the ring and landing on his feet smoothly and busting out basically standing Houston hangovers in the ring, that's going to stand out and it's going to draw some attention. But to your point, he's probably not going to be someone to put a match together. They rely way too much on his acrobatics and his flexibility, which is fine, but we've seen other acts that can do that and still put a match together or still be decent enough wrestlers in the ring. He's fine for his position. The issue here for me is that if you noticed who was in the 24/7 crew tonight, there was Jeff Hardy. There was Shelton Benjamin. There was Cedric Alexander. There was Humberto Carrillo. These are four acts who have been in much higher positions throughout the last year, and yet here they are suddenly back in the 24/7 title picture. And I think what having Reggie does is it gives them a reason to maintain the 24/7 title, which then gives them a reason to maintain this lower card of basically hapless fools running around. And like Cedric Alexander today, basically ran himself and knocked himself out into a turnbuckle. And Cedric Alexander is a good wrestler. Not the greatest promo, but he's a good wrestler. And to make him look so dumb like that, it just doesn't do anyone any favors, except if you're only trying to elevate Reggie and no one else, because Tozawa and R-Truth have been caricatures of themselves throughout this time that Reggie's been champion. But the interesting wrinkle tonight was that Drake Maverick was back. And unlike everyone else, he wasn't running after everybody. He was very serious and just had a look on his face like he was about to burst. So they're bringing some intrigue back, and maybe Drake takes the title back. But I think the 24/7 title, we've talked about it many times before, it's more of a detriment to the roster than it is a benefit. There's still ways to bring Reggie onto the show and do his things without having him be a champion that takes up 5 minutes every week, when that 5 minutes could be spent building up another women's contender or a tag team contender or something like that.
I want Drake Maverick to say that guy who ran out of the trailer is his grandpa or his dad or his crazy uncle, and you scared him and he's in a psych ward or something. I don't know. I wouldn't call Drake Maverick showing up like Minoru Suzuki, Ruby Soho level surprise, but it's, you know, hey, Johnny Fairplay might not like us saying this. I don't know his latest thoughts on him, but Drake's done some good work the last years, and I think he's well liked. So I'm curious what they do with him and what that demeanor is a hint of, you know, what that portends. Okay, we'll wrap up here with Ed in High Desert, California. I said we get to Karrion Kross. He gets to him at the end of this email. So that will cover that base. He says, how do you think this Raw compared to the previous low viewerships for the previous two holidays, 4th of July and Memorial Day? I thought this show fell into the positive column for Raw in a broad general sense, but there was nothing I'm going to tell my friends about. With how they opened the show with all the promos for the tag title match, I would have preferred to have gone right into the match. Why the push all of a sudden for Randy Orton and Bobby Lashley? I'm not against it, but with the RK-Bro stuff and now Lashley facing Orton and Riddle for the tag titles, I don't know, it feels a bit convoluted. I guess they just have no one else for Lashley, huh? Riddle's material tonight definitely missed the mark. It wasn't funny or goofy, just dumb. So I'll pause there. He's got a couple other points to bring up. I'm fine with, you know, if Orton, RK-Bro and Lashley and MVP are feuding, but at least Orton and Lashley is sort of just, you know, a one-off match. And that gives Lashley a fresh opponent and gives Orton a chance before maybe they end up on separate brands in a month or so, a chance to have a one-on-one match. I'm fine. I mean, why not? I'm for like one-off feuds. I like, you know, Charlotte and Nia Jax in a two-week program. Like the problem we had, it's a big problem we had with WWE for so long is, especially this, you know, this spring and summer is just the same thing over and over and over again. So if they are finding a way to work in some storylines that are sort of a little bit outside the lines, things we wouldn't always, you know, we wouldn't necessarily expect from them, I'm for that. So a one-off Orton match that is spawned from a tag team feud, why not? I'm fine with it. And yes, Riddle's material is hit or miss, and when it hits, it's amusing, but they seem to have no gauge for what's a hit and what's a miss. I mean, I don't know what gets filtered and edited, but it's like they have no idea what's good or bad before he says it. And I got to say, I think they could probably ask a lot of people and get a pretty consistent answer about what belongs on TV and what doesn't with his material.
Last week and this week were particularly bad for Riddle in terms of the promo department. But in regards to, you know, this one-off match, it's kind of like having Reigns versus Balor this Friday as the one-off match heading into the Saudi Arabia match between Reigns and Lesnar, which there's a storyline reason behind it, just like there's a storyline reason behind this, is Lashley and MVP basically last week interrupted and set their eyes on the title, and that came about. The match ended because of some interference, and they lost, and they went back at setting their sights again on Orton. So for me, it's not like Orton just came out as a parade of a challenger kind of thing and said, I want your title. No, the WWE champion actually came out and challenged Orton for his title to begin with. So I'm okay with how this story has played out, and especially if it just goes through next Monday. Or through Extreme Rules, I'm sorry, because Orton is probably getting the next title shot after the tag team match next week, which I wouldn't be surprised to see the titles change hand next week just to have some more intrigue leading into the Extreme Rules match and then Orton somehow turning that into a winner-take-all match. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens because they kind of set the seeds for that tonight too.
You hate to, you know, stop the momentum of RK-Bro, but if you have an intermediate title change to kind of forward a storyline, but they end up, you know, with the belts again, or they end up getting drafted to do it for Brandon and you don't want the belts on them. I mean, I guess that's a way to tell. It can make sense.
Yeah, the draft being there is just such an albatross on the booking because I don't think it's hard to have an idea of where to go the next 3 months when you're probably not even sure what's going to happen on the show next week until the day of. And with the draft happening too, it's just that much more up in the air because there have been plenty of stories in the past where talent weren't even notified that they were being drafted on the night or that things were changed night of in terms of the draft. So it's really just hard to determine where things should go from here because of the draft. On the other hand, I do think that even with that that albatross of the draft, you know, tonight's Raw, in terms of the matches that they're setting up for Extreme Rules or in the next coming weeks, was a really good job in terms of setting that in motion or keeping those things in motion. However, to the emailer's point, I wrote that it felt really like a running through the motions show, which is fine at times when I wish Raw had more of those running through the motions shows, but it's probably not a good time to have a running through the motions show a night after what many are calling the best wrestling show in years. So it's just, it's a very precarious spot for WWE to be in when AEW has so much more momentum. They're trying to bring that momentum from SmackDown to Raw, but that extra hour really hinders them. And then there's a draft. There's just so much going on, and I want to believe that the extra competition is going to lead to a bettering of all the shows throughout wrestling. You talked about it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. We haven't discussed the fact that in a few weeks, MLW is having Jacob Fatu versus Alexander Hammerstone for their heavyweight championship. That should be one of the best matches of the year. There's just so many things going on. Death before Dishonor just happened for Ring of Honor, I believe, too. So
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on for pro wrestling fans that it's going to be hard for WWE to, you know, maintain 2 million viewers across both shows. And they're really going to have to step it up. And I'm not sure if all the things on the show tonight are a positive indication of that, Karrion Kross being, you know, one of those things.
He asked about the ratings. July 5th, the day after July 4th, they drew a 1.09. That was down 0.06 from the week before. and down 0.15 from the week before that. The Memorial Day rating was 1.10, which was down 0.10, 10 one-hundredths, and it was also down 0.15 from 2 weeks before. So similar drop-offs. This past week, like 2 weeks ago, Raw drew a 1.43 rating, which was up, but then they were down to a 1.34 this last week. So they're starting, you know, with live crowds here from a higher point. So I'm thinking, I mean, I think, you know, SmackDown's good. I don't think there was a ton of buzz coming into this show, but I don't see any reason. I mean, I'm just kind of, I hadn't thought about it, so I'm kind of thinking it through here as I talk. I think they'll end up with a holiday rating of 1.21. That'd be a little bit above where they were on July 12th, the week after July 4th. The lowest, you know, they've had since crowds are back, but I don't think they'll sink below 1.0 or, you know, below the 1.10 and 1.09 that they did for the last two holiday shows to answer Ed's question.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how I do. My official prediction, 1.2. We'll find out in like 15 hours. All right. Let's see. I stopped mid-email here, so we'll wrap up with the second half of his email here. I've been beating the drum that I feel WWE has failed to really light a fire since fans came back, raised their game between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam, not to mention the overall excitement going on in wrestling. Considering AEW's pay-per-view Sunday and the possibility that fans will tune in, thinking, let's see how WWE reacts on just a wrestling high, figuring the possibility of newish-type viewers, those that don't watch, periodically watch, or maybe who are simply AEW fans, would this Raw make any of those people start watching again? You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I don't think this is a show that actually featured things about Raw that are good, like RK-Bro. You know, I don't think it was a good week for the chemistry with Randy and Riddle. Riddle didn't have fun lines. You know, New Day put in a marathon match and took a beating. There, I guess if you're not a frequent viewer, you don't know how to find down some of the teams were in this match necessarily, so it might benefit a newbie versus a regular viewer. I don't think MVP was shined on the mic. You know, he was cheered by the Miami fans. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it was like a huge sludge to get through this show, but I don't think that anything that WWE is doing particularly well had a good week, a particularly like standout week. So I don't think this was a show that would entice anyone, even if it wasn't us. We've seen some slogs. This was not the worst Raw in terms of just kicking back and watching it. But I don't think it's the type of show that creates a new Raw fan who's going to now start watching.
Yeah. The only match I might recommend people, you know, view would be the McIntyre-Sheamus match, but I would have to give them the caveat that this is the one time, you know, the one match a show you're going to get like this pretty much on Monday nights, unfortunately. So you were talking about, you know, a sports presentation earlier with Shayna Baszler, and it's working for AEW to a certain extent with some of their characters like Miro, and how just you feel that what they're portraying is actually part of who they are. And some of that comes because of some of these people have authentic sports backgrounds. And playing into that, I think, is a small but effective way that WWE could bring some fans back, and making it seem more contender-ish, like having a malleable but defined path for people to become contenders for championship matches instead of just coming out there and saying, I want a title match after losing for four straight weeks kind of thing. I think something that simple would really help bring these viewers back that the emailer is talking about.
Very good. I didn't like the stop and go with the tag match, but are we going to see something come of Mace and T-Bar destroying the match and four wrestlers? By the way, I like the stop and start. I thought it was an authority figure making a smart call. Some heels beat up some wrestlers. We don't want to continue the match in that situation. Let's give them a chance to recover. Yes, it's clearly a format gimmick so that they can have something to fill an hour of the show and then come back to it later in the show. I mean, I get why they did it and why some people might kind of roll their eyes at it, but this was a holiday show where they're going to have fewer viewers than normal. And, you know, they found a way to fill the time and give some TV time to wrestlers who often don't get it to have, you know, a few moments in the spotlight in the match. I was fine with the start and stop.
I understand your reasoning. I think in a vacuum it would have been okay. But I think to me, the reason I didn't like it on this specific example was that if you're going to book Bass and T-Bar to be big monsters like that, just have them win matches and do it in the match instead of acting like spoiled, angry kids who lost afterwards. It just because you have, as you said, T-Bar, Dominik Dijakovic, Dominik Dijak, however you want to call him. This man is, when I first saw him in the Top Prospects tournament in Ring of Honor, I was blown away. Feast Your Eyes is one of the most fantastic moves I've ever seen anyone hit. And he could hit that on anybody. It's ridiculous. He's hit on Keith Lee. He's hit on smaller people. For me, the reason I didn't like it is because it took away from what those two could be, but especially T-Bar. Just make them be dominant in matches and have them win. And that's part of my issue with having these sorts of matches. Again, these could have been tag team matches, individual tag team matches over a couple of weeks to have a title match at Extreme Rules. I know they went with it next week, but that was my aversion to what happened here. Now, in a vacuum, like you said, it works. You establish who the authority figures are. There's a hierarchy. We're not going to let that stuff happen. But I think here it did more to harm Mason T-Bar than it did to sort of elevate both the New Day and Mustafa Ali and Mansoor. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. All right, he said, Nikki looks like a child trying to wrestle. WWE sees that as a feature, not a flaw, but that is a true observation. He said, I care enough to write this, but I don't care one bit about Karrion Kross. His words mean nothing, and his match was blah. Just so you know, I listened. Kross did say he would eviscerate Morrison. I didn't notice a pile of ash in the ring, so he failed to live up to his words. Keep up the great work. I enjoy all the podcasts, the VIP shows. Go VIP. Thank you. Ed in High Desert, California. So Karrion Kross gets a sit-down interview with Morrison. Did this work for you at all? Is this a better way to feature Kross? Did we finally learn a little bit about him? What was the good and what was the bad of the sit-down segment and the match?
I'm not sure yet if Kross is better in a live promo or a pre-recorded promo, because this was a pre-recorded sit-down, and it didn't seem to go – according to Twitter, from what I saw, people were really talking like Karrion Kross did not do well, and John Morrison really bodied him on the mic. And I think Morrison's quirkiness is to the point that people just accept it and like it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of his euphemisms for water and things really annoy me, but I understand why he does it and how he's oblivious to it, which fits his character, and he's somehow a face because of that. But for Kross specifically, I think he needs either to go back to having edited vignettes, or they need to bring Scarlett and just have her talk, because it is not great. He talked about he's going to eliminate Morrison from existence. That did not happen, right? Morrison's still alive, and if he wasn't, then Kross would be in jail. But two, stop saying fall and pray. Please just stop saying fall and pray. As menacing as he tries to make it sound and look, it's too rehearsed and overacted at the same time. The other part with this that I thought was odd is as they're cutting to break, when Karrion Kross made his entrance after that pre-recorded Moist TV, they did a Connor's Cure ad read. And I thought that was some weird placement to have a Connor's Cure ad read. Right after someone's talking about eliminating someone from existence and falling and praying, you're talking about raising money for cancer, for pediatric cancer. So, you know.
Jimmy Smith didn't know what tone to take with that either. Like, it was, he's like, you want me to do what now? After we just watched what? But by the way, I gotta pick on Jimmy Smith a little bit. I've been laying off him, and I think he's been, you know, better. You know, we don't get the, are you kidding me, with a completely wrong inflection. You know, that just sounds so phony and insincere and inauthentic. And I'm gonna do the best of criticism of Jimmy Smith here, just as my setup. And he's not talking like he's trying to lift a car by the bumper constantly. You know, he's getting better about that too. So, New Day put in like this amazing performance. You know, can they do it? Will they overcome? This would be one of the great tag team performances, great Raw performances of all time. And they almost make it, and they lose. And so what word does Jimmy Smith choose? You've used malleable and albatross today, Bruce. You've used the words accurately even. Like, these are big words people misuse. You're like, That, and I say that just to be, you know, like compliment you, but also be kind of whatever, funny.
I have a
but,
PhD, so hopefully I do use that right.
Exactly, yes. But there, there are PhDs who are good at one thing and not good at the other. But so I'm being like self-aware, patronizing when I say that.
Yes. I understand. I'm just I'm playing along, I guess.
Yes, totally. So Jimmy doesn't know those words.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a dumb guy, but vocabulary is not his thing. Precise use of words isn't his thing. Doesn't mean he's a bad person. But he's chosen for a job in which being artfully descriptive to enhance what we're watching on the screen and find the right words to match and enhance the emotions that the bookers and the wrestlers are going for is his job. And his use of words, his vocabulary is, and this is no insult. I know fourth graders I love. I have a son who is a fourth grader not too long ago. And they can talk and they can communicate and they have a nice vocabulary. It's serviceable. That's where Jimmy Smith is. Like, it's more fact than insult. And when you're on national television, it's like, just like learn some better words, like learn some good words that are like descriptive and appropriate. But it's something you have to practice your whole life. You can't just like study a thesaurus for a week then you'll sound idiotic. And so my build of all this is New Day lose. And what word did he choose after New Day won? He could have had strung together words. What? They put up a great fight and, they came up short, but what? No, his word was finally the New Day eliminated. Finally? You know, like.
Maybe he was channeling The Rock.
He's implying that it was inevitable. And a welcome finish.
Yes.
You know, like, finally, Wade stopped talking about Jimmy Smith. That's what people are saying right now. That is the appropriate use of the word finally. Finally, Wade is done talking about Jimmy Smith. That's how you say finally. You're relieved that something is coming to an end that you've been anticipating and hoping would come to an end sooner. That's what that means. That's not the right use of the word finally. So I know. It's late in the show. It wasn't a ton of talking points here, but that stood out to me. The story of the show was one of the big stories was New Day, like what they went through. And it just showed, it bothers me. You should hire somebody who's good with words and can enhance and not cut the legs out from under the moment that New Day just worked really hard for however long they were in the ring total on this show. And he goes, finally, the New Day lose. I mean, I just fall on the forehead.
You should have just said they put up a valiant fight.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you brought up Jimmy Smith and what he's there for, because I forgot exactly what Corey Graves said, but one time during the show I caught him saying, well, Jimmy, you're not here for your skill or something, you're here for whatever, and they kind of went to break. But I thought, oh, is that cutting across, is that breaking kayfabe a little bit? Because you're a little like Wade there, Corey. So, yeah, I want to go back and find that clip just to see what he actually said. But he definitely said something like that on the show, into the mic on air, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I will do my best unless Jimmy really calls for it to not do a best of what, you know, what Jimmy's shortcomings are. But I think announcing is a big part of shows, and I don't tune out the announcing. I think it's we hear their voices more than anyone's on a show, and their job is to enhance the product. And I think Jimmy's there for the wrong reasons. He got hired for the wrong reasons that irritate me. About WWE, Pat McAfee is a success story. Jimmy Smith is fine, but I resent that he's not really good or excellent. And
it's ironic. One is a trained broadcaster and the other isn't, and the trained broadcaster is failing while the one who's not a trained broadcaster is succeeding.
Well, Pat McAfee is like really, really smart and, you know, has done a lot of podcasting he's a better fit for what they're asking him to do. You know, I mean, part of that is just, you know, knowing, I don't know.
He's gregarious.
Yeah. And funny. And like, he could so easily be that kind of MSK, Mojo Rawley type obnoxiousness where you're like, oh my God, I can't even watch a show with him on it anymore at all. Yeah, I get. And he like has that bombast and in your face. And yet I get just enough. I don't know that I want a lot more, but it's just my dose of Pat McAfee every week is welcome and pleasant and entertaining. I'm sure he rubs some people the wrong way, but I think he's self-aware and smart and clever and deliberate and What he does, he now my vocabulary is failing me. There's a good word I'm looking for. What he does with a sense of purpose and executes well. He's aware of what he's trying to do when he pulls it off. So there. Okay. I think, is there anything else from Rob Bruce you want to bring up quick?
Let me think here. Not that I can really think about, aside from, I do think that they have something with Ali and Mansoor. The dynamic between those two is very interesting. And I'm just intrigued to see how far either Ali goes to becoming a face again or how far he brings Mansoor to being a heel and what that becomes. Because I do think they might not win the tag team championship, but they could definitely have a run to challenging for them.
That was going to be my closing point. we had talked about. No. I'm glad. I'd rather you do it. Yes, it's again, it's one of those little things. They've just been kind of building slowly and building pretty well. And it, just everything Ali's part of is, even if it's awful, he makes it less awful. If it's just okay, he makes it a little better than okay. He enhances everything he's part of. And I think he's doing that here with Mansoor, who's playing his role well. So, all right. Well, on that note, I'll be by. No, I think Zach's by Wednesday night. Well, someone will be by Wednesday night covering AEW Dynamite. Yeah, Zach's covering Dynamite on Wednesday, and then I'll be covering SmackDown on Friday. Super SmackDown, in fact. So check back here on the post show for those. And Rich fans scheduled to join me as co-host on the flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. So look for that. And for more Torch-style podcast fix, go subscribe for free to the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Search PW Torch. Or better yet, go VIP. You can support us on Patreon for as little as $4.99 a month and get all these shows ad-free with some bonus VIP shows, or upgrade to a full VIP membership through Patreon, credit card, or PayPal, and then gain access with a full VIP membership to our archives and get all of our podcasts throughout the week. Thank you, Bruce, for co-hosting and for covering Raw in detail tonight at pwtorch.com. Check that out, everybody.
Thank you, Wade. It was interesting that we went from Raw post show to AEW PPV post show to AEW roundtable to back to Raw. So hopefully people had fun along the ride with us.
Absolutely. And for people waiting around until I got to Jimmy Smith, you had to wait till the break. Almost. finally, funny. Wade got to Jimmy Smith. All right.
Finally, yes.
Finally. Finally, The Rock has returned.
Yes.
We have been waiting for New Day to lose for a better part of 3 hours, and they finally lost. Yay. all right. Take care, everybody. Thanks, and we'll talk to you next time.